You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
I'm Shea Pataja, and I'm here for the stats and laughs.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and the opinions given are for informational purposes only and are not intended as financial, tax, accounting, or legal advice and are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their individual needs with an appropriate professional.
And welcome back to Prout Financial Design's New Retirement Radio with Prout Financial Design. Leading off today with Mr. Prout, Dennis Prout, CFP, Certified Financial Planner, and CPWA. Good morning, Mr. Prout.
Yes, good morning, Ron. It's great to be here. Thank you. On Thursday?
Thursday.
April 21. April 21. Also joining me today, Heidi Thompson. Heidi?
RICP. Heidi Cartwright.
Tip gum. Sorry about that.
It'll catch on. It'll catch on.
I'm used to that still. Cartwright. Good morning, Heidi.
Good morning.
And it's our own managing director as well. Back from a spring break.
But I took a little jaunt down to Florida, and boy, was it ever nice down there. So the sun still exists.
Tell us, what is it like?
Well, then Shay Pataja, our CXO, Chief Experience Officer.
Yes.
Great to have you here with us.
The gang is back together.
It is. Got to get used to that. It's been a while since we've all been together.
They're getting the band kinda back nuts. Together.
Yeah, that's right.
So today we're talking about inflation and possible recession, where the rubber hits the road, and stats. I've got some information I think you'll find helpful. Bottom line is, how do we know how we're doing? Where are we now? Conversation yesterday with a couple... known a long time, clients. Where are you now? How do we control risk was what they wanted to know. And what are the opportunities? Where are the opportunities in our portfolio and or in the economy where we could participate with what's happening? Now, inflation, we're going to discuss this in some detail, and the potential of a recession, which is kind of surprising to people perhaps. How do you have inflation and a recession? So we're going to try to answer that question, balance out that conversation. First off is the concept of the money illusion. Many people don't understand that inflation has a real impact other than just the gas price. And we're going to talk about some of those numbers. Experiments have shown that people generally perceive an approximate 2% cut 2% cut in their nominal income, or maybe their wage as an example, with no change in monetary value is unfair. But also that a 2% rise in nominal income where there is a 4% inflation rate as fair, despite the fact that they are rational equivalents. So sometimes it's almost like that proverbial frog in the, in the pot.
It's like when your wages are going up, even if prices are going up more, mentally, you feel better because you're making more. But it's the same thing, like you were saying, as if your wages were cut just at 2%.
Yes.
So, I mean, that it's sort of just the psychology of it is very interesting on how people react to these things.
It is, and not necessarily nearly so negatively, even though it's the same impact. Now, the real numbers are really something to take a look at. Month-over-month increases from October to March. Just to give an idea of how these have increased. Food and beverage, month-over-month for October of last year, was up 5.12% for the month. That's why you're seeing such changes at the grocery store. In March, 8.96%.
Yeah.
So, that's why everybody's saying, when is this going to end? Well, it certainly looks like it's going to begin to decline here, according to the experts. But these numbers are, I don't know what I'd call them eye-popping, but they're certainly attention-getting. Housing, 4.5% increase month over month in October. Now, in March, rather, 6.36%. Transportation, 18.69% in October, 22.6% month over month in March. Energy, here's the big one, as what everyone has been noticing. Yep. Almost 30% in October, 29.9%. In March of this year, 32% month-over-month increase. So these increases are beginning to have a real impact on people's wallets, their pocketbooks. And we, I think, innately or intuitively become concerned about how's our economy going to withstand this kind of price increase. And that's why the Fed most likely is going to, the Federal Reserve, is going to increase interest rates by 0.5%. 0.5% here in May. That's what most prognosticators are talking about.
And the last rise that they had, that was 0.25. That just was in March,
yeah,
right?
A quarter of a percent.
So this is twice as much jump.
So they're trying to quell this inflation. And the question is, will they have an impact? Will they be able to do this? Recent month-over-month total consumer price index increase 1.34%, which equals 16% annually. 16%. In terms of CPI, man, that goes back way 50 years since we've seen numbers like that. 50.
Wow. Well, the cost of living allowance for Social Security recipients went up last year, but this year it could go up again, right?
It could go up possibly even more.
Yeah.
That would be fascinating.
That's very painful. If it doesn't, if that's really painful. I mean, for people who are living paycheck to paycheck, this wasn't a frog in boiling water. It was more like a polar plunge. They felt it almost immediately and have been feeling it. So it is...
It's dynamic.
It's pretty intense.
It really is. For those on fixed incomes, this is going to be really tough. Exactly. What's interesting is how the dollar is being impacted not only internally here in the United States, but worldwide now too. So we have multiple impacts of this spending spree, if you will, that the federal government has embarked on. This significant spending increase is what's driving this inflation. There are too many dollars chasing too few goods. That's what's happened. So while everyone has participated in these extra checks coming in from the Fed from the last couple of years, this pandemic that's happened, now the piper has to be paid in terms of what the impact in rising prices has been. And it's not just related to the pandemic, this short-term supply issue that we're talking about. It's partially related to inflation as well.
Right. Well, there's some things they didn't see coming. For example, the amount of millennial moms that were going to quit their full-time jobs to stay home because kids were home and it was too hard to balance everyone working from home with the kids home from school, etc. They didn't anticipate the careers that stopped because of the pandemic and people were forced to retire early, or people who, I'm talking from the chamber event we went to, the economic TC Connect event, the expert that talked. And then he said, not only did jobs end, if their job ended, they had nothing to re-enter into because their career came to an end. So we're in this like strange transition phase where it's not really clear where everyone's going to land as well.
It's very unclear. I think an interesting piece here, Rob, our economist, he refers to the explanation of what's happening here as so complex, almost difficult, almost beyond understanding. Mm. And I thought, well, okay, I'm not going to read that particular series of quotes. But it's amazing how difficult it is to try to understand this. But we all get that prices are increasing, and our illusions about that, if indeed they are, need to be put aside. How do we deal with this? How do we participate in hopefully raising our level of income? How do we do that? And or raising our portfolios, if you will, to try to take advantage of what's happening with this? Because in essence, it's not just about playing defense. How do we play offense in a very difficult environment? Alasdair MacLeod, who is a well-known brokerage firm person from London Stock Exchange, 40 years, four decades of experience. The U.S. dollar is in trouble as the world's currency of choice, ahead of gold, ahead of the gold and the Russian ruble, and the pressure at home and the pressure abroad from both Russia and China. So Russia and China are beginning to say, as Russia just did, we want to be paid in rubles. We don't want to be paid in dollars anymore. So the dollar's role as being the currency of choice on the world stage is beginning to see its own fault lines because of our government spending. And it's coming back to haunt us, not only here in the United States, but on the world stage as well.
Right. And with Russia having that energy dominance over in Europe, where Europe's so dependent on the energy from Russia, and them insisting on being paid in rubles helps uplift their currency and sort of changes the playing field a little over there in Europe. So it is something that is something that people are watching right now.
Yes. So the question is, will the Fed be able to quell inflation? And this is a great quote from MacLeod. It's a bit longer, but I think you may find it helpful. He says, and this was as of April here of 22, over the past weeks, gold prices have showed a strong resilience to the relentless rise, rather, in both nominal and real interest rates. Normally, when those are coming up, gold tends to decline because then the threat of inflation and or a declining dollar tends to go away. For the first time, he says, since 2020, gold prices are now reflecting slightly higher inflation expectations. We think that overall markets are too optimistic about the Fed's and other central banks' ability to choke off current high inflation rates with aggressive monetary policy. In essence, then, rising interest rates. He doesn't think, and the growing consensus is, that the Fed's going to be able to stop this inflation. We believe that the Fed will stall economic activity before it can choke off inflation, which will force them to reverse course long before it reaches its target interest rate. In essence, they're going to blink. They're going to say, well, the economic activity has come down so much, given a rising interest rate environment. There go mortgage rates, right? We're starting to see that in the housing market right now. At national stage, not so much perhaps in the United States. What are you putting up there, Ron?
I was looking at the 30-year fixed mortgage rate. I just wanted to see what it was. It's 6.75, and I didn't know it jumped up that high.
I would really question how accurate that is, Ron. Let's see. Seriously, that doesn't look accurate.
Bank of America. Let's see what they have.
Yeah.
30-year fixed. Okay, there they've got 4.875 there. Okay.
Yeah. It's in the 4.75 to 5% range, which from compared to a year ago, at what, 3.25 or whatever that was, about a year ago, significant increase. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's going to begin to have an impact on people's ability to afford their homes and afford perhaps the more moderately priced homes.
Well, I read a Shaysat last week. I wish I had it with me. The amount of investors that are buying homes, and they're beating everyone out.
Yeah. Right.
So there's that pressure.
There's that huge opportunity for that, taking a lot of these homes off the market in terms of inventory. But I think we're going to start to see inventory increase. Why were people holding homes? Well, for a variety of reasons, but because they were appreciating so much. The other part of this is getting used to the inflation thing. If I sell this house, well, that means I've got to move somewhere else, and I don't really want to enter this housing market. There might not be a place to buy, and or the price will have come up so much that I'm going to be shocked at the price, right? Mm-hmm. So we believe that the Fed will stall economic activities, we mentioned. Current long-term inflation expectation, 2 years to 10 years, simply imply that investors are too complacent, as they attribute a very low probability to such a scenario. When investor confidence in the Fed's ability to rein in inflation erodes, real interest rate expectations will move lower again, resulting in a sharp increase in the price of gold. Mm. So his argument is that he doesn't believe the Fed's going to be victorious over this inflation situation, and that they're going to cause then a rise in the price of gold, which would represent a possible opportunity for those who are buying those sorts of assets, whether it be energy, as Warren Buffett is doing, buying significant pieces of the energy market, or others who are buying gold mining companies or gold and silver to try to hedge against this inflation, which they traditionally have played a positive role, not only in inflation, but also in a declining or weaker dollar, which would which is most likely what we'll see on the world stage.
He's probably basing that analysis on the past behavior of the Fed and how they don't always
they're not always able to follow through with that. and of course, they're trying to satisfy not only the economy, but their politicians as well, who sit in Washington, D.C. Shay's got some real cool stats here to accentuate the point.
Accentuate. What did you say? I don't know, Jeff.
Lots on inflation, of course. So for the 9 years from 1973 to 1981, inflation using the Consumer Price Index averaged 9.2% per year. For the 9 years from 2012 to 2020, inflation averaged 1.6% per year.
Wow.
Percent per year. So that's the Bureau of Labor Statistics. A little difference there. Here's another one. Inflation using the Consumer Price Index as the measurement was up 8.5% for the 1 year ending March 31st of 2022. That's more inflation than the United States experienced over the 4 years of 2017 to 2020, when the CPI advanced 7.9% over the entire 4 years. And that's from the Department of Labor.
So when inflation goes up, interest rates go up generally?
Right. Demand for money is extremely high, and that demand then results in higher prices, which is the price through interest rates.
So Shea said in 1973 through 81, inflation was 9.2% a year.
Isn't that radical? How long that lasted?
Yeah.
Yes,
but
8
that
years.
Recalls mortgages back then were in the
insane.
Teens.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, how soon we forget.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, most of us were alive from 73 through 81, Ron.
Right. Yeah, I think my mom and dad said that their first mortgage was 12 or 13% interest rate. And my uncle was in college at that time to become a periodontist. His interest rates were 15% for student loans.
Wow.
Right.
It's just, he's like, it's brutal. Crazy. When I graduated college, he was like, I don't want to hear you complain, is what he told me.
No complaints.
63% of 2,062 American adults surveyed during the first week of April this year rate the condition of the U.S. economy to be fairly bad, 32%, or very bad, 31%. The dominant reason that these individuals were disappointed in the U.S. economy, inflation and the rising cost of goods and services, and that's from CBS News and YouGov survey.
Yeah,
this is just a really sad show. I'm sorry.
63%.
I don't know how to
amazing.
Make it better. We could play some Brandi Carlile. That would cheer me up, Ron. 60% of American workers born in 1943 were employed by companies that provided a defined benefit pension plan. I'll say that six times fast. Just 6% of American workers born in 1964 were employed by companies that provided a defined benefit pension plan. Sources: the Center for Retirement Research.
Most people would say that's 1/10 the number. Isn't that dynamic? And that's what you mentioned that before when we were walking through our information before the show. That's what we've talked about, this, the amount of responsibility shift back to us to try to figure out how do we make this income last, and at the same time participate with our portfolio to try to keep it ahead of inflation. All these concerns that are out there, this recession risk, all these other risks that are inherent in a portfolio and in an economy in particular, how do we take advantage and control the risk at the same time?
Well, you could listen to one, New Retirement Radio. You could listen to our podcast. You could join our classes, which are set for the fall already. That's Retirement Planning Today, and that's a class Dennis has been teaching for a very long time, and they keep doing a fantastic job of updating the information, and Heidi teaches part of the class too now, so we'll be doing that through NMC this coming fall. So,
and that is exciting. I love that material. I really do.
It's really great.
And they improved it dramatically from what we were using it several years ago, and frankly, kind of lost interest. And so we set that aside. But when they came back, that was really fun to see. So I'm excited. That's in October, is it not?
Yep. Yeah.
We'll Are you hearing from your clients now with the inflation, with the changing economic factors? Are you hearing from people to say, Dennis, do we need to recalibrate here?
Absolutely. Uh-huh. What are they looking at? Number one, what is our risk? And it's been felt both in bonds and stocks. Bond funds have been down equally to that of stocks for the first quarter of this year, which traditionally you don't think, well, bonds are Mr. Boring, right? Well, they lost or were down by just about the exact same amount as stocks were. And we're talking treasury bonds, treasury notes, that sort of thing. So treasuries were down about 5.5. Bonds were down about 5.5 for the first quarter of this year. Yeah,
it was across the board. It was
because rising interest rates tend to drive bond prices down.
Right. Mm. Yep. This next stat hits really close to home for me, and probably you too, Dennis. I took a picture leaving our family farm of them dozing down the farm across the street to put in a huge development on Sunday, our Easter Sunday. So the days of us being able to look out on rolling farmland from the Potage farm are coming to an end. It's very tragic to see this happening, but 70% of the ownership of farmland in the United States will change hands during the next 20 years as the current group of farmers and ranchers retire. And that's the Department of Agriculture. So we're seeing that go, obviously, to...
Do you know who's buying up all the farmland?
Who?
Bill Gates.
I would hope so, because...
He has 242,000 acres now in 19 states.
Wow.
Bill Gates is buying farmland.
Mr. Farmland owner.
Will you look up this stat for me? Because I do believe that China owns 40% of our farmland currently. There's an article. We read that stat at one point, and I want to make sure it's accurate. So we'll have Ron look that up. All right, here's one about Russia. Russia has until Wednesday of May 4th, 2022, to pay $2.2 billion of foreign debt that was originally due to be paid to an American bank on April 4th of 2022. If Russia is unable to pay the debt in U.S. dollars, as it is required to do, the default on foreign debt would be Russia's first time since 1917 or 105 years ago. And the source for that is AP.
So the information I have on China, Agriculture Foreign Investment Disclosure Act, China has just a little more than half of 1% of the overall, we'll call it 36 million acres of farmland. So just a small percent, but comes out, I would think, maybe 1.8 million acres.
Yeah, maybe you saw the 36 million acres there. And
I was trying to remember where that number stuck in my head.
Correct.
There we go.
They own more than Bill Gates, though.
Always good to double check. Too many Shea stats to remember. People will say, hey, what was that stat you read last week? I'm like, hold on. Let me grab my notebook.
All right. We at break time here, Ron, or we got some more time for
info? We've got time here, yes.
All right, let's break into our information then, too, in terms of inflation. Inflation, according to Goldman Sachs, Nomura, J.P. Morgan, Georgia State, and Loomis Sayles, five of the ones that Rob, our own consulting economist, deem as being more reliable in terms of where the CPI is going to be. The Consumer Price Index, second quarter of this year, they're saying the CPI is going to be at an annualized 8.3%, 8.3%. By third quarter, 4.9%. And by fourth quarter of this year, 3.6%. Rob views this as being still relatively conservative. We will see. But if we get an inflation tamp down, if you will, that would be a good thing. Whether or not this is longer term, there are some well-respected prognosticators that are saying this is going to last for a much longer time than just 1 or 2 years.
Can I run a few text questions by you?
Sure, you bet.
Somebody said, can a husband and wife filing jointly both have a Roth IRA and both contribute $7,000 per year. They're both over 50 years old.
If you have earned income and you're within the qualifications of below, I think it's $200,000 is the max, modified adjusted gross income for a couple, $200,000.
And right, it can't be more than the earned income. So if you don't earn that amount...
A good point as well. So between the two of them, they would have had to earn $14,000 for 21, if this is indeed a contribution for 21. Now, obviously, now it would be a contribution for 22 because we're beyond the tax filing date of April 18th.
As of Monday.
All right. So if they're both working and both earning more than 14 grand a year, it's okay. They can both put the 7,000 in each.
You betcha.
Okay. If European countries are paying in rubles and the ruble's value is vastly diminished, are they not paying much less for energy? That's like a double negative, so I have to figure that out.
Well, the price could go up.
Well, if the ruble is already trading at a discount, I think is the question, to other currencies. No. And if that's the case, then they may actually be able to get a discount on paying, having paid that in rubles. Whether or not they're willing to do that and convert that to rubles and drive up the demand for it is another question. And frankly, I personally don't keep track of where the ruble is versus other currencies.
So true.
And one other, you will now.
So I cannot answer that either. Question with the amount of knowledge that one should have.
Ask an economist.
Yeah.
One other comment from the text line. We remember paying 22% interest on farm equipment loans. Can you imagine that?
It's wild. Wild stuff. Mm. So you obviously, if you're paying 22%, you're being much more conservative in your purchases. Doesn't that just go, but you know, it almost goes without saying. Mm. So if people necessarily then will make be much more careful with their spending, given what's happening, that's where they view a recession as happening. We're not going to be nearly so free, if you will, to hop on a flight to Denver, Colorado, or elsewhere, given the price is 2 to 3 times what it once was a year ago, so long ago. Now, another of the recession situation, to put a fine point to this, we were talking about whether or not this was the inversion of the yield curve. What does this mean? The 2-year, 10-year treasury, right now the 2-year treasury is at about 2.46%. The 10-year treasury is about 2.385%. That is a yield inversion. Every recession in the last 70 years has only happened after the 2s and the 10s have inverted. And history would say that the recession risk is 12 to 24 months out. So just to put a fine point on that, it's only happened in the last 70 years when that has occurred, the inversion, the yield inversion, and we're there right now.
So, and a recession is 2 quarters in a row with negative growth.
It is, and a negative GDP.
So that's the definition, but what's the impact then? We would see, right, with inflation, we see higher prices. If you throw in a recession, what do we see then? Just
Well, it generally a decline in stock prices because, the stock market tends to forecast where the stock market is going. If the stock market, given that the economy is in a decline situation or going to be in a declination point, then the stock market tends to forecast that by declining itself. So that's always the fear. Mm. If it's anticipated that we're going to go into a recession, we're probably going to see a declining stock market at some point here. Mm. And the chances of that possibly occurring through this summer and into fall are really quite high, some analysts would say, because of this inflation situation, higher cost, and the control that the Fed is going to try to place on this inflation, resulting in then lower growth potential from our stock markets and from our markets in general and or in specific. Now, what's interesting about this, too, to accentuate the point, to say that word properly, Vanguard comes out with their monthly report on where they view equities and their return potential for the next 9 years.
Equities would be equities.
Equities,
stocks.
Stocks, okay.
stock ownership. Okay. U.S. equities, their return projection, 2.8 to 4.8% per year for the next 10 years. That is not very exciting, given the risk that we have in purchasing stocks at these prices.
Given what we're used to.
Given
over
what
the,
we're used to.
The last decade.
6 to 8, 7 to 9, mm-hmm. you know, maybe even 8 to 10%. Mm. Global equities, 5.7 to 7.7%. So global, certainly some better, but still relatively moderate, again, given the risk we might take on with owning those kinds of stocks. It's just important to note that the return that we can expect in the next 10 years, necessarily much more conservative than what we have seen in the last 10 years. We'll just say from 2009 to 2022, the stock market has returned. It's gone up about five times, mm-hmm. almost six times in that time frame. Very unlikely we're going to see that again. Okay. Now, global ex-U.S. developed markets equities, 5.1 to 7.1%. Emerging markets, 4.3 to 6.3%. So we can just be in the range of saying anywhere from 3 to 7% per year. Rates of return in world markets, including the U.S., really quite conservative.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it's important to understand, okay, how do we deal with this? How do we perhaps even tamp down what we think is going to happen? And how do we defend against the volatility that we would anticipate? How do we do that?
You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
I'm Shea Pataja, and I'm here for the stats and laughs.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and the opinions given are for informational purposes only and are not intended as financial, tax, accounting, or legal advice and are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their individual needs with an appropriate professional.
And welcome back to New Retirement Radio on WTCM with Prout Financial Design. Dennis Prout, Heidi Cartwright. Hello.
Oh, good catch there, Ron.
And good job.
Yeah, caught that one. And Shea Pataj in the studio.
We try to make your life more interesting now.
Mm-hmm. Yes, right.
It's the tire show. We're talking inflation today.
You bet. Great quote.
Ba-dum-ching.
Yeah, risk cannot be destroyed. It can only be shifted through time and redistributed in form. So what should we do about all this? Should we bet the farm on growth? Or how about betting the farm on all scenarios? All scenarios, because obviously we don't know. Is the Fed going to be able to finesse their way through controlling inflation and not sinking us too deep into recession? Or as some would say, they're not going to be able to do it, period. If indeed we have all these scenarios, which most likely is the case, given stats, just looking at the numbers, if you think we're going to have growth, consider that, but also be aware that the growth potential is somewhat less right now. Number two, are we going to have a recession? That would mean perhaps owning defensive companies that are more defensive in nature. For instance, such as a Procter & Gamble, a food company.
Walmart.
By the way, Walmart. Just following up on that, or interrupting you, sorry, but somebody texted, so what would you suggest one do if he's retiring in 10 years, given that information that you were giving before the break there with all that? And you're kind of hedging that now, what some of the options you would have?
Yeah. If you can, and it's all dependent on your own risk tolerance. So for me to say, here's what you should do, is really inappropriate, but generally invest for all scenarios, some growth, some conservative, some defensive. Do you have any assets that are fixed in nature that don't fluctuate? You may want to have some of that these days. Do you also have some assets that can prove as an inflation hedge? So you really need to have, consider answering all these questions. Try to set aside your own investing biases. Wow. Utility stocks have always been the place to be. You know, whatever it might be. We all get that. Mm-hmm. Real estate is my go-to investment. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. Invest for a variety of scenarios within your risk tolerance. Okay? Never has this been more important, I don't think, than now. It is begin to set part of your portfolio, if indeed you're going to need to draw income up, begin to set it up 8 to 10 years even out. Do we have anything that could provide us income in our portfolio so that we can retire? We can go to Tennessee. We don't want to go to Tahiti. We want to go to Tennessee, whatever
so,
that
so
is.
So you want to diversify not only in like the areas like you were talking about, consumer defensive and maybe energy and different things, but you also want to diversify in the type of product you're buying. Maybe not everything in equities, but spreading it out in different types of assets. So diversification on two fronts, basically.
Yes, whether it's diversification for growth, diversification for income, or diversification for taxes. Oh, who would have thought that? Yeah. Are taxes most likely going up? You know, that's where the political realm is talking about right now. How do we raise taxes on all these billionaires so that they're paying their fair share? Well, if they're paying their fair share, that tends to bleed down into the rest of us, okay? Given that reality, how will that impact us, and how do we pay some tax today, given today's historically low tax brackets? Ron, you keep telling me this, and I don't know what else to say. Ron keeps telling us that taxes are at historic lows right now. See him fibbing there.
Well, and the thing that none of us like to do, especially the government, is look at our budget and look at how our expenses and where we can make changes. That's the most, I think, for me, the most painful work always.
It is very painful work. Each person has their own focus. Ben Franklin said that so well. He said some need to improve their financial situation by cutting expenses.
Mm-hmm.
Others are more comfortable raising their income. Where are you? That's a great question, isn't it? Now, if you need to cut expenses to give yourself that space, that's where you're most comfortable, then by all means, do it. You know, be a budget fiend. For those of you who are thinking about, how do I improve my serve? How do I improve my knowledge base? How do I perhaps get some more education? All of those things play a huge role. And then, thus, you perhaps will be able to save more money. Given this volatility that we anticipate, what a great time to put money in every month. This gentleman or spouse, who asked that question in regards to their Roth, what if instead of putting in a lump sum, they decided to put that in every month? Then they take advantage of that decline in the markets, assuming that happens, if they invest through that decline. So sometimes it doesn't have to take a rocket scientist to take advantage of this.
Little tiny pivots.
Tweaks,
yes,
right?
Adjustments.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I went down to the store the other day and bought some silver. You know, I didn't ever think I'd see myself doing that. But, you know, whatever they are. Yeah. Perhaps he's an Australian or whatever. Buying those sorts of things.
Australian.
So, based
I don't know
on
where that came from.
I love it.
I went to Disneyland on his vacation.
Yeah, good luck with that, yeah. So, taxes. If we believe that taxes are going up, how do we take advantage of that now? Perhaps paying some more. How do we save some more in tax-free investments, as this Roth question would be? And how do we take advantage of that, given that we would anticipate drawing income in the future? How can we draw income for more tax-free investments possibly in the future than we are right now? All of these come to the fore in terms of helping us to decide how to take advantage of this current situation. And then another sector possibly could be looking at, without getting into sectors, what sectors offer me those opportunities and or us, our family.
Do you think savings like CDs in that will make a comeback if interest rates go up a few more points?
I believe they will. All of a sudden, we're going to be surprised that CDs are offering now 1%, 1.5%, maybe 2%. And that could be interesting, no pun intended. Still, most likely falling behind inflation. But interest rates, we'll start to see actually interest accruing in our savings accounts possibly.
When we were talking about the 80s, 22% farm loans, 16% mortgages, CDs were big back then, right?
Oh, they were huge. Yeah. Yeah, 13, 15. I think the highest rate I ever remember hearing from a client was, I think they said they got 15, 16% on a CD.
Wow.
Crazy
that
stuff.
That is crazy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It is.
Yeah. Very sad to see those go. But at the same time, what's interesting, I still remember an old quote from Paul Sutherland when I started with him back in 1985. He said, you know, I could not talk people into buying treasury bonds in those days because they weren't yielding any more than the money market fund. The money market fund was yielding 18%. Jeez. And they looked at me and said, why am I going to get 17% from a treasury bond when I can get 18 in my money market fund? You see, isn't that interesting?
Crazy.
The perspective of history. Mm-hmm. So sometimes the things that you find more difficult to do or to purchase, think about it. Think about it. And sometimes being uncomfortable, maybe at least partially uncomfortable, may still be healthy for you as well, which is not necessarily a fun thing to do. The stretches, the physical therapist, all the rest. But how do we remain somewhat uncomfortable in our portfolio? Because it goes against our biases, but may indeed still make the most sense to be and or stay right where you are right now, given that you just reviewed where you're at.
Right.
Okay.
Thanks so much for listening. You can find us online at proutfinancialdesign.com. That's P-R-O-U-T, financialdesign.com. Also, you'll be able to find us on iTunes and SoundCloud.